This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The pandemic has shed some much-needed light on so many of the public health issues that were already in play before autumn 2019. In Detroit, chronic lung diseases like asthma and COPD are no exception. These are some of the conditions that are considered risk factors for a poor outcome if a person gets infected with COVID. With us today is Brian Allnut. He writes for Planet Detroit, and his most recent article looks at air pollution in the Motor City, asking the question, will COVID force us to take air pollution more seriously? Brian Allnut, welcome to Stateside.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of pollution we're talking about when we do talk about air pollution in Detroit?
So there's a number of pollutants that are impacting Detroiters, and that includes things like sulfur dioxide, volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, which can also contribute to the formation of ozone, and then PM2.5, or fine particulate matter, which that last one comes from a variety of sources, including cars and trucks. And taken all together, these contribute to a high incidence of asthma and COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, when compared to the state average. And research shows that PM2.5 and ozone in particular are the primary driver for early mortality from air pollution in the city. And it's estimated that these two pollutants account for 660 premature deaths a year.
Mm. Brian, you went out with our Michigan radio colleague, Sarah Hewlett, and you two spoke with a man named Robert Shobe. He lives on the east side of Detroit in the Connor Creek neighborhood, right next door to the Stellantis Jefferson North Assembly plant. And he talked to you about why he thinks they've been allowed to open and operate in spite of what Strobe sees as obvious public health risks. Let's take a listen.
Because it's majority black-owned and because of income. We're invisible, the majority of us around here. When I'm disabled, I'm on a fixed income, I'm invisible to them. I don't exist.
So this is unfortunately not a very new story. Communities most affected by pollution from industrial companies like this are mostly low income, and a majority are people of color. And these also happen to be some of the same communities that are experiencing disproportionately high infection of COVID. What do we know about COVID outcomes in places like this where pollution is high?
So there was a Harvard study that came out this past year that showed places where there's historically been a lot of air pollution over a long period of time, and they were specifically looking at PM2.5, that was associated with an 11% increase in COVID mortality. Although experts that I spoke with stressed that causation hasn't been definitively proved there. It's also been suggested that the virus itself could attach to this particulate matter and spread more easily, and that's been backed up by a few studies that have come out.
Yeah.
But in Detroit, experts say that pollution could be causing worse outcomes, but that the pollution often exists in neighborhoods where there's also a lot of poverty, there's a history of discrimination and poor access to healthcare, and all of those are contributing as well, along with social factors like in-person work, working in factories and warehouses that can make it more easy for the virus to spread, as well as multi-generational household, public transit use, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Recent data from the city show that there's very high case rates in zip codes in Southwest Detroit that have historically had a lot of pollution. And so that would include the 48210 zip code, which has the highest rate of confirmed cases in the city, and the 48209 zip code, which is in the top three. Although there are other places that have high case rates and high mortality that aren't necessarily the most polluted areas.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you were looking at a couple of neighborhoods that have big projects. big renovations or big builds going on that included something called the Community Benefits Agreement. For folks who may not know that term, can you explain what those are?
Yeah, so a Community Benefits Agreement is a contract between a developer and a community to deliver certain benefits to the place where that project is taking place. And oftentimes that looks like building parks or providing a certain amount of jobs. And Detroit has a community benefits ordinance now that requires developers to offer benefits if a project is a certain size or if it receives a certain amount of public investment. So the Gordie Howe Bridge project in the Delray neighborhood in Southwest and the Fiat Chrysler or Stellantis expansion on the east side are examples of this, although only the latter is part of the official community benefits ordinance. And some of these projects are taking place in neighborhoods that are already experiencing a lot of pollution and a lot of heavy industry. Delray and Southwest in particular has a number of industries, or is close to a number of industries, including Marathon and AK Steel. And also, there are several expressways and a lot of truck traffic.
It sounds like there's some potential here to use these community benefit agreements to mitigate pollution. How much is that happening?
Advocates say not as much as it should. On the east side, the FCA Stellantis expansion, which is a big project encompassing several auto facilities, it received tax incentives that could total more than $400 million, and it's expected to create several thousand jobs. But it's also expected to increase emissions for VOCs, which, as I mentioned before, they can combine with nitrogen oxides to create ozone. And that's a major trigger for asthma. So $15,000 is being offered per house in the area near the plant. And that's to help people do things like install new windows that could help protect them from pollution. But some residents have said that that money isn't even enough to repair damage that was caused to foundations and windows by the project itself. I spoke with Robert Shobe, who lives right next door to the plant, and he has COPD, he's had cancer, and he said that the community benefits that the city negotiated for him and his neighbors is wholly inadequate.
A real community benefits would have started with the studies going down before they ever moved a piece of dirt or concrete or built anything. They would have studied what the impact would have been on the community and had some kind of resolution or done something to mitigate what they were going to do here instead of just, well, we're going to get jobs and that's what it's all about and we're not going to let these jobs get away. So whatever it takes, we're going to push this through. And that's what happened. They pushed it through.
Yeah. So, Brian, what is an alternative? Would something like relocating be an option for somebody like Mr. Shobe?
It does not seem to be an option as part of the present community benefits agreement, but that is what Mr. Shobe is looking for. But he says that for some of his neighbors, that's not even an option.
My neighbor over there is 94 years old. She's been living over there 55, 60 years. She's not looking to go anywhere. She should be able to be safe in her home, if nothing else. She doesn't get out and go a lot anyway. So why not come over here and do what needs to be done to make her house safe from these pollutants that potentially are coming out? We know they're coming out, but on what level? Who knows?
So the message I'm getting here is that it hasn't been a very effective method so far, but that the agreements could be vehicles for more pollution mitigation. What about the neighborhoods where there are not new projects to attach these requirements to?
Well, there's certainly things that could be done, and that could be something as simple as vegetative buffering or tree planting along major roadways to catch pollution. Also, more monitoring and stricter enforcement for companies that are violating pollution limits. That could have a deterrent effect across the city. And many advocates are pushing for permitting that looks at cumulative impacts from various industries in a community rather than examining each permit on a case-by-case basis. Also, an environmental justice screening tool like the one that California uses could help, and that directs investment in pollution reductions to communities that have been impacted by environmental injustice.
I know that you were interested in finding out if President Biden's COVID relief packages might include something that would help people out. What were you able to find out about that?
Well, I don't know, and I'm not sure if local governments know how they're going to spend that money yet or not, but that's definitely something that community advocates are pushing for. They believe that some of this money should be used to fund home repairs, which is a major issue in the city of Detroit, and something that could help protect Detroiters from a number of environmental threats, not just air pollution, but you know, issues like heat and flooding as well.
Brian Allnutt is a writer whose work appears at planetdetroit.org. You can see his latest article about air pollution and public health right now on the website. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.